very much the civic heart of the city for events and gatherings in big crowds, and something that is significant to signal the transition from between the two centuries, right? The 1900s and the current century, right?
So this is our, 2000s, if that's the right word for it.
Yeah.
The noughties, is that
the
what
noughties,
you call it?
The noughties. Right.
So finished in 2002, this project. And what's really important about it for Melbourne, apart from being giving Melburnians a place to meet and a place that is a point of reference in the city, I always think of it as a pivot for south and north. You know, it's the kind of place that everybody knows in the city. The important thing about it was it emerged out of a whole lot of work that was being done, started in the 80s in Melbourne along the south bank of the river. And the government of the day was in, we'd been looking at other cities around the world and saying, what on earth does our river look like? It's just embarrassing. So we had started to improve our south bank of the river and remove the industrial precincts, the car yards, the kind of maybe back of the city kind of stuff that was taking place on the river. And so this became, in the 2000s, almost the culmination. We'd reached Swanston Street with our improvements on the river edge. And the Victorian government just had been investing in these really high-profile civic projects, including the Jeff's what's Shed, forgotten what it's called,
the Exhibition
Centre,
right.
Of course, etc., South Bank, pedestrian circulation, bike
the
circulation, Melbourne Museum north. Up north. And then what happened in 1997, and it was really brave, government said, we are going to demolish the two government buildings that are sitting on the Fed Square site. And they were known as the gas and fuel buildings. Once again, you know, we've been talking about Melbourne's cultural history. They go down in history as two buildings that Melburnians really remember. You know, those two giant buildings.
In negative terms.
In very negative terms. Representative of the 1960s, sitting on Flinders Street and blocking the city to the river. And luckily they were in government hands, so government was able to say, we own this site, we own these buildings, we're going to get rid of them. That's incredible, really. It was an incredible and quite brave decision that government took.
It went along also with the idea of privatizing most of, you know.
Oh, so there is a political story behind it.
Yes.
And they weren't just being good guys.
But certainly, instead of putting some other speculative towers, they decided to create a civic hub for the city, which in that sense was very dangerous. And very also daring, as you said, to open up an international competition for it, right?
Yep, international competition. All sorts of very interesting, submissions on the competition. One of the judges on the competition was Daniel Libeskind, very well-known international architect, and the winning scheme can absolutely, you can see Daniel Libeskind's influence in saying, this will be a very interesting addition to Melbourne's building stock.
Well, this was the period of time of the so-called deconstructivism, where there was a trend, which was not purely aesthetic, but also intellectual and philosophical, that was also reflected in architecture, where architecture somehow had to explode and with contradiction and complexities, and it's almost turning buildings into something that was hit by an earthquake, basically. So the idea was to fragment and create very, very complicated spaces, and you can clearly see that spirit, you know, reflected here.
Very
in
much
this
so. And it's an important building in a way because it's one of the not many really global built examples of this particular project type, I think.
Yeah, it's very much American and European trend. There's a bit of Berlin here, only Libeskind himself being American, but it was the star architect period of the late 90s where global projects started to take shape. And so we have a bit of that. And in fact, we can tell about the two architects that were involved in
design. Yeah, we haven't
mentioned.
Yeah. The architects who won the competition were called Lab and Lab Architecture Studio. One was an Australian, came out of Sydney, And the other, Donald Bates, Peter Davidson was our local Australian architect. The other partner was Donald Bates, who came, I think he's a Texan, came out of America, and they teamed up out of London, taught at the AA in London, which is a very highly respected architectural school. Very progressive architectural school. And it really represents, as you say, Giorgio, the philosophical, what was going on in literature, what was going on in fine art, what was going on in all the different kind of streams of cultural pursuit, if you like, around the world. Underneath this, interestingly, is the original Prince's Bridge railway station. So there's where we're on a deck over the top of the railway station, and Prince's Bridge railway station is still there to this day, but at a slightly earlier stage than Federation Square, it got linked through to Flinders Street railway station. It used to be a separate railway station. The platforms got linked. There's quite a scary kind of under-road platform that is still Prince's Bridge platform that sits underneath Federation Square. One of the other very interesting things about Fed Square is using the space underneath that is there because of the railway lines. Lab designed a labyrinth, or their services designers designed a labyrinth, an air labyrinth underneath. So the whole of the square is serviced through this incredible concrete labyrinth where air is cooled or warmed accordingly. And it's a very interesting, probably the only example of its type in Melbourne as well. The narrative behind it, you know, we've been talking a little bit about Melbourne's fluid walking networks and the tertiary networks that you can take to get through the city without actually going onto the main streets. So Lab talks about the narrative of Fed Square being similar but different because it still has those tertiary corridors, the tertiary links, the staircases to the river, the connections that you don't really know are there unless you get yourself lost in it. So it's very much a fragmented, labyrinthine kind of design.
Very much. And reflect very well also in the envelopes that assemble these materials in fragments and different structural expressions of the fabric of the building.
Very complex facades. As you say, I've always thought I'd love to bring kids here to teach them trigonometry. No, really right. Using architecture to teach mathematics in this kind of environment.
Indeed, I should say I'm an academic, so I used to invite my students to come here and we had an assignment where students had to come here and get lost and find some areas they could explore and understand in detailing, for example, because there's a lot of different junctions and complex.
It's almost like a piece of industrial design, isn't it? It's the connections are important, the junctions of materials are important. There's zinc and
stone,
there's sandstone, bluestone, and zinc, and the junctions are so interesting. One other comment I would also like to make about it too is it's got, I reckon, one of the best small community theatres in the world. Deacon Edge is an extraordinary space because the rostrum sits in front of a glass fragmented wall and you are looking out at the river while you're listening to someone speak.
Which dispels the myth that somehow this square does not offer a transition of the city to the river. Indeed, it was certainly an improvement from what was there before, but actually, if you have the time to get lost in these meanders, you'll find that there is actually a way to the river that you can discover.
I think the enclosure from the river was more about our southwest winds to try to protect the usable part of the square from those terrible winds.
That's right, and that's a very intelligent understanding of what a square or a piazza is. It's fundamentally a negative space of surrounding buildings. So in order, if you open up towards the river, then you don't have a square anymore, but you have a promenade, which is what's going to take us to the next building, I suppose, in South Bank, right?
I was going to say it was hugely controversial, both at the time it was built and still. You know, it's loved by lots, hated by lots of people too, but even those who maybe don't love this as a piece of architecture or a piece of Melbourne. It's very much become a piece of Melbourne, and it's also the controversy that exists around it. No, that's never a bad thing for a place, really. And I think it has absolutely embedded itself in the psychology of how we use our city.
Some of the controversies regard the possible evolution also of this space, which the architect didn't quite intend to be a closed, untouchable environment, but very much the idea of having a space that is somewhat flexible and therefore open to change.
It has been actually put on the Heritage Register. I believe it was one of the first 21st century buildings in the world to be put on a Heritage Register. The danger with that is, how do we change it? And it's always, in the eyes of the original architects, it's always a living place that needs shifting in some way. So it's the sensitivity of how one does make change to any place that's got that kind of value.
Yeah, certainly a dynamic public space of Melbourne, broadly speaking, in all senses.